This is Todd Steed. You are listening to Studio 865. On the phone with me right now is Guy Mendelow. He's the leader of the Guy Mendelow Ensemble. They will be performing at the Clayton Center for the Arts in beautiful Maryville, Tennessee, on Thursday, October the 12th at 7:30 p.m. Guy, thanks for talking to me. Someone coming out to this show, what should they expect? What are they in for?
Sure. So we're bringing a show called The Forgotten Kingdom to the Clayton Center. And this is, it's a production that blends music and storytelling to tell a story that I think in many ways is relevant today also. And that's, it's the story of a passing of one age into another. In this case, all the music comes from the former Ottoman Empire. And most of the music comes from the early 20th century, late 19th century. These are all originally women's songs from Sephardic communities, like what was then Salonika, which is present-day Thessaloniki today in Greece, Sarajevo, Rhodes, places like that. And, you know, it's interesting that this music has any instrumentation at all in our production, because originally these were women's songs that would have been performed only in places like home or communal celebrations, and they would have been entirely a cappella. So, you know, part of what we're doing is an attempt to tell a story that I think is very much alive still today and is in many ways playing out today and has resonance with today, but in a way that will be relatable today. And so it's these old stories recast in a modern guise. And the instrumentation, this is a quintet that features Sofia Tosello from Argentina on vocals and Chris Baum on violin. We have Andy Bergman from the United States. He plays woodwinds and thumb pianos and jaw harps and all kinds of textural instruments. Tara Krantisi from Palestine on percussion, mainly cajon and frame drum. And then I get blamed for the music, so I do the arranging and the writing and the show creation, and I sing and play birimbau and guitar. And I'll
say it's a real feast for the ears. It's just such exquisite performance and arrangements. How did you find this group? I mean, this is not a group you can just put an ad in the paper and they show up. I mean, this is a real international lineup.
That's right. You know, this is the ensemble itself creates specific shows. And so in many ways, I looked for musicians and artists who could help make this vision for this particular show come around. For example, with Sofia, you know, all the language in this show, the sung language, that is Ladino, which is essentially an archaic Spanish, which gets blended with words in Turkish or Greek or Arabic, depending on which community we're talking about. And so it was obvious that I needed a native Spanish speaker. But more than that, there is a way of telling a story emotionally that I resonate with in many South American canción traditions, and especially in tango. And Sofia's a tango singer, and she's really adept in bringing out that kind of intensity and that kind of raw passion, which is not necessarily traditional to Sephardic song, but that I think helps make the story come alive in a really powerful way. And so I reached out to her specifically about this show that she has since become part of the family, and really part of the family is something that, you know, one of the blessings that I have is to work with people who are both extraordinary musicians, but also extraordinary people. And what begins as a professional relationship very quickly develops into something that goes quite a bit deeper. And I would say that's the case for all these guys. The only person that didn't come around for this show in particular was Andy Bergman, with whom I've worked since 2004. And we met through working with dancers, and he was playing a bunch of really odd instruments, and I was playing a bunch of really odd instruments, and we were lugging up six flights of stairs, and it just seemed like we should join forces.
Now, when you talk about the Ladino language, I find it really fascinating. It's close to Spanish, but it's definitely not Spanish, right? And what can you tell me about the uniqueness of this language in terms of as a source for a specific type of song or music?
Yeah, you know, so I guess the first thing to say about it is that there's a little bit of disagreement as to whether Ladino, which goes by other names, Ladino is only one name. Other names in Morocco, it would be called Akatia, or it could be called Spaniolit, or Espanol Muestra, or Sephardi, or Judaismo. Later, the different strains got lumped together under the umbrella term Judeo-Spanish. There's a bit of a disagreement as to whether it's actually a language. UNESCO considers it a language, and it's considered an endangered language, one grade above extinction, or whether it's really an old form of Spanish, kind of the way that Shakespearean English would be to us. You know, we don't really consider it a separate language. And we would understand most of the words in the same way that a Spanish speaker today would understand most of the words in Ladino. The interesting thing about Ladino is that it's also kind of a ghost language. You can think of it of a bit of a time capsule. And the reason is that in 1492, when the Jews and also the Moors were expelled from Spain, the door that slammed behind them slammed with a finality. And they lost contact with their home, which meant that whatever pronunciation they happened to have or whatever mannerisms they happened to carry, expressions, kind of stuck. And at that point, Spanish severed from the language that these people spoke. And in Spain, what began as a common core just continued to evolve over 500 years until it is today what it is today. But these people carried that language with them to their new homes. And instead of evolving in the same direction as Spain, they evolved towards whatever was happening in those new homes. So towards Arabic or Greek or Turkish. And what that means is that some of the same pronunciations and words and phonology was preserved. So in an interesting way, if you're very interested in listening to the way that Christopher Columbus would have spoken, then Ladino could be a very good place to begin because it captures a lot of that, which is why today when we read it, it reads basically like Spanish. But when you hear it, it sounds odd because it's pronounced in part the way that Spanish was pronounced 500 years ago, but then inflected in the ways that each community inflected it.
Is it true, like certain words are very close, like mujer, which is woman, is like mujer? Is that what I read?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the other thing is that, so in that case, that's a really great example, because the J in Spanish today is not pronounced J like in Portuguese. You know, you would say mujer. But in Ladino, it's mujer, the same way that Portuguese would pronounce it, or maybe French. There are other places where it actually looks like a mistake. And there's a, for instance, if we were to say buenas tardes in Spanish today, that would be with the R preceding the D. In Ladino, it's buenas tardes with a D preceding the R. And if you look at it real fast, you'll just think it's a typo, or you'll think that the person doesn't really know how to speak very well. But actually, that's the way it used to be in Spanish 500 years ago. Another good example is thank you very much. In Spanish, it would be muchas gracias. Here, it's muchas gracias with an added N. And I'm friends with a Ladino professor in Chicago, and she told me a story. She grew up in Venezuela. And her mother spoke Ladino, only they didn't call it Ladino. Like many people, they simply called it Espanol Muestra, our Spanish. And this woman thought her mother was an idiot because she kept mispronouncing all these words. And, you know, and it didn't dawn on her until actually a long time later that her mother wasn't speaking the Spanish of Venezuela. She was speaking a Spanish that came from their home community in the Mediterranean. It was Ladino.
I think we have a local equivalency of this in the Appalachian region, where there are a lot of phrases, even though it's dying out quite a bit, but especially in the early part of last century, you could go up in the mountains and hear phrases that were very much in common with Shakespearean English. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then people would a lot of times sort of laugh at them and say they've got it wrong. But in fact, it was an older form of English. I mean, it's just like the term fall, you know, which we use in the United States, which came from England, though they don't use it in England anymore. It's and you can still, even today, hear up in the mountains sometimes, you know, phrases like yonder and things like that.
Yes. A lot of that also came from, you know, different immigration patterns. But, in certain places like in Scotland or other places, other pockets in the British Empire, they would use things like these and thous and all kinds of that well into the Second World War. I was just reading a book, Quartered Safely Out Here, which is a firsthand account of the Second World War and these British troops. And that's the way they're talking. And, you know, these patterns came over here at various points. I think since then they may have been edited out. I don't know if they still use these and thous, but that's going up to basically 1950s.
It's such a unique concept and a unique show. What is the response that you've been getting from audiences?
I think that, first of all, it's worth saying that we're not expecting audiences to know much of or anything about these communities. And in fact, if you ask, you know, if you walk up to typical anybody on the streets of typical anywhere in the United States and you say, okay, so, you know, do you know about the Spanish-speaking Jews of Greece? They don't know and they don't care, and that's not why they come to this show. I think that what's important about this show is, number one, that these vignettes that make up the Forgotten Kingdom are good stories. Not because they are Ladino, and not because they're Ottoman, and not because they're Mediterranean or Balkan or Jewish or anything like that, but because they're simply good stories. And, you know, in part, people like Tolkien were looking at these stories when they were doing research. You know, Tolkien looked at this for Middle Earth in part. And in part, I think that the story of the stories, the Forgotten Kingdom is a long-form show, and it weaves together vignettes. And it asks a question that I think is in many ways alive today too, and that is, what is it like to be transversing or to be right on the intersection of the passing of one age into another? This music comes from right around the First World War, going into the Second World War, you know, at a time where major structures are collapsing all around. You know, in some ways, all of old Europe collapsed, in at least the values collapsed, and so much that people fought for and died for in the First World War turned out to be, you know, empty and hollow. And out of this comes movements and populist movements like the rise of fascism and, you know, all kinds of ideas about what it means to go back to something that was greater. Maybe it was mostly it was a mythologized greater. And then you you enter into the spirit of the Second World War, and it's a little frightening how much relevance that has to us today. We don't talk about today in the show. We talk about then and long ago and far away, and the show transports you. But I think that the connections are pretty obvious. And in many ways, we're also living at the cusp. And we're unique in that, you know, in the sense that a lot of, in going back to the First World War, you have a lot of accounts of people who lived before the change, or you have a lot of people who were born afterwards and they were already born into a world that was transformed. But what is it like to be right on the cusp, right as, you know, one foot in one world and one foot in another? And I can't help but wonder whether 60 years from now, people are going to look back at us and ask us the same question, whether it's because of, you know, who knows what. But I think the point is that people are transported by this music, but I think that they also find resonance with dilemmas and debates that are alive and well today. And the response has been very strong.
Guy Mendelow, it was a distinct pleasure to talk with you about music and language and all sorts of good things.
Todd, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you as well.
And here is the Guy Mendelow Ensemble with Una Noche al Borde de la Mar, at the edge of the sea.